This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up on Africa News Tonight.
He says Europe will need, from now to 2050, more than 50 million people to be able to support its public social system.
That was translation of Seville University professor Pablo Sanchez saying Europe needs migrants for its future. We'll have full details on this story coming up. Also, Zimbabwe's farmers face challenges as they prepare for another farming season. VOA says goodbye to a longtime contributor and friend. And Uganda's Ebola survivors recall the horrors of the disease. We'll have these and stories and more all ahead on Africa News Tonight. Spain has overtaken Italy this year to become the number one destination for migrants traveling from North Africa. Local authorities in the southern region of Andalusia say they need more help, warning that migrants are sleeping on the floors of police stations and churches. As the numbers grow, many are questioning whether there will be a political backlash, as Henry Ridgewell reports from Seville.
The ferry takes just an hour to cover the 14 kilometers from Africa's northern tip to Europe across the Strait of Gibraltar. Spain's shores have tempted over 50,000 migrants to risk making the crossing this year, usually in much more dangerous boats. More than 550 people have drowned. For the migrants who make it across, Seville, the capital of Spain's southern Andalusia region, is often a first stop. Seville University International Law and Relations Professor Pablo Sanchez says migration should be welcomed.
Las migraciones son siempre bien deseadas.
He says Europe will need, from now to 2050, more than 50 million people to be able to support its public social system. He says Europeans are the ones who need immigrants, but migration has to be regulated and this has to be done by Europe. Contrast that view with Italy, facing similar demographic challenges, where the populist government has clamped down hard on the arrival of migrant boats. Sanchez says he does not believe similar political forces will sweep through Spain.
No creo que sea posible.
He says the problem has to be resolved jointly, but it is a deep problem that the European Union has no jurisdiction in migration matters, leaving the most important legal competence in these matters at the national level. The European Union in July gave Spain $29 million in emergency funding to bolster reception facilities for migrants. Integrating the new arrivals is a different matter. At this Spanish language class, funded with help from the state, students describe why they have come to Europe. Mamadou Kante is eager to show off the Spanish he has learned. He says he wants to work in Spain to support his mother back home. He adds he has a girlfriend and a baby boy there, so he has to work for them. Guinean migrant Laurent David Coman, who says he is 18, says he has nothing to lose. He says his mother died a long time ago and he has never known who his father is, so he says faith has been his only support. Many of the students are children who travelled alone and are now under government care. But Teresa Escobar of the Andalusian Human Rights Association says the authorities are overwhelmed and many other young migrants simply disappear. She says it is very worrying because if these kids are not taken in by the authorities, then they are in the hands of the mafia and no one knows what their future would be. The Spanish government is backing EU calls for migrant processing centres in Africa and investment in African economies to tackle the poverty driving migrants to its shores. But for now, Spain must cope economically and politically with becoming the new favoured destination for migrants seeking a better life. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, Seville.
Thank you. Italy's efforts to host a summit on stabilizing Libya appear to fall flat today. Organizers on the final day of the meeting in Sicily failed to even confirm whether representatives of the main factions are attending. One major player, General Khalifa Haftar, commander of the Libyan National Army that controls much of eastern Libya, arrived late Monday. However, it was unclear whether he took part in the talks. Rome wanted to keep the focus on Libya, where chaos has reigned for 7 years since Libya leader Muammar Gaddafi was toppled. But what was apparent at the meeting is the brewing rivalry with France over who will lead efforts to pacify Libya. Libya is currently run by two administrations, a UN-backed government of national accord run by Fayez al-Sarraj in Tripoli, and another in the eastern part of the country headed by Haftar. Italy and France have business ties in Libya, and their rivalry, some analysts say, hurts peace prospects. Italian officials deny any such rivalry, saying Rome and Paris have a common interest in stabilizing the nation, an important source of oil and gas for Europe. Libya is also a departure point for migrants heading for Europe, often using Italy as a gateway. Each year, thousands of African students leave the continent to study in developed nations, and many don't come home. University leaders from Eastern and Southern African universities say governments need to create incentives for students to come home to build their nations. Eugene Iwimana has more from Rwanda's capital.
You know, universities are one of those institutions.
Richard Edema knows firsthand how hard it can be to return home after studying abroad. The director of Ugandan Center of Excellence works for Uganda's Makerere University College of Agriculture and Environment Sciences, but he struggled with the decision to leave the United States after finishing his doctorate.
I considered going to Canada to settle in Canada because at that time they told me Canadians have opened their borders, they need people like me to go there, so I could have gone there. I considered remaining in the United States, getting a postdoctoral job and working within the university, which I could have done, but the funding agency that I went with gave me hope. They made it, the conditions, very favorable and attractive for me to come back.
Edema has a vision of the growth Africa would see if African scientists return home.
I think when we stay here, it is our sustained effort that is going to even make the rural people who are very poor, most times very fragile, live under fragile conditions, who are going to improve.
He's among the scientists and university heads gathered today at the technical and advisory meeting of the Eastern and Southern Africa Higher Education Centers of Excellence in Kigali. Professor Alexandre Jambabaje is the executive secretary of the Inter-University Council for East Africa. He says governments need to improve the working environment and value science so that African scientists can help develop the continent with their education.
Yeah, that is a phenomenon that has been observable for the last three, 4 decades. There is a need for countries to sit, think deeply, and find out how to incentivize great scientists to come and work for their continent.
Since 2013, the World Bank has funded the Africa Centers of Excellence projects across the continent. Tajita Bashil, the World Bank Education Manager in East Africa, says the Centers of Excellence aim to help strengthen African universities. She says doing so will fight the brain drain and foster greater academic exchange on the continent.
One of the reasons why people go abroad is that the quality of the programs is better in some of the foreign universities. So we hope that these projects will enable more Africans to study in Africa and also to address African problems.
There are estimates that by 2040, about 85% of the world's young people will be in sub-Saharan Africa. The World Bank says it is important that a large proportion of these young people have access to good quality higher education and that there is a critical mass of well-qualified scientists and engineers to address the challenges of Africa. Eugene Uwimana for VOA News, Kigali.
Keith Ethiopia has arrested the former head of MedTech just hours after 63 officials of the huge military-run conglomerate were charged with corruption and human rights abuses. State-run media reported Kinfe Dagnu was taken into custody last night with other officials near the border with Sudan and Eritrea. Attorney General Berhan Nutasege yesterday said that for 6 years, MedTech made international purchases totaling $2 billion without any bidding processes. He also pointed out that in August, the government ousted MedTech from a $4 billion dam project on the River Nile due to numerous delays in the project. Zimbabwean farmers are preparing for yet another farming season and are facing a number of challenges attributed to the country's ailing economy. Reporter Kuzayi Svinavashi has details.
It's the rainy season in Zimbabwe. Showers have begun in some parts of the country, while in other parts, heavy clouds indicate a downpour could occur at any time. It is an exciting season for many farmers as they prepare their land and plant their crops. However, that is not the case this time for Innocent Joe, a farmer in Masingo. He says, in the past years when he bought maize for the rainy season, about 20 kg would suffice. But with the way the economy is today, he failed to even buy 10 kgs of maize seed because it's so expensive. The price hikes of various basic goods and commodities that occurred a few weeks ago has affected agriculture inputs such as seed and fertilizers. Tariro Mushonga is a farmer based in Chegutu.
A lot of people are willing to pay $15 for their cooking oil, and not many people are willing to pay more than a dollar for their vegetables. The price for the maize seed has gone up. The price for the fertilizer has gone up. The price for chemicals that you spray has gone up.
Mushonga says, in the past week, inputs have gone up by over 200%. There are 1,000 other farmers who are facing challenges as Joe and Mushonga. Jeremiah Tevera is the director of Zimbabwe Commercial Farmers Union.
Nobody anticipated that a 10 kg acre of seed would cost $100 plus. So this actually threw everything into disarray, and people had to reconfigure their strategies for the season.
Tevera says, because of this, the expected harvest has been hugely diminished. Uncertainty about the weather is also contributing to the problem.
To make matters worse, the season has been forecast to be having less rainfall than is normal. So this will just compound the problems that the farmer is faced with, and also the prospect for the nation in terms of agricultural output.
Mushonga says the fair thing to do for farm workers is to increase their wages, another issue that could affect farmers. Tevera remains positive about the season and says their farmers union will continue to lobby the government and private sector to sustainably reduce the price of agricultural inputs. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zvinavashe from Harare.
You're listening to African News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. At 19 minutes past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. Spain has overtaken Italy this year to become the number one destination for migrants traveling from North Africa. And university leaders from Eastern and Southern Africa say governments need to create incentives for students to come home to help build their nations. For more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. We in the English to Africa service of the Voice of America are saddened to report the passing yesterday of Dr. Solomon Nyang. Yang was a regular contributor to many of our radio and TV programs over the years as an analyst, offering insight into some of the most complex and high-profile stories. He was a professor and former chairman of the African Studies Department at Howard University in Washington, D.C., and served as a deputy ambassador and head of chancery at the Gambia Embassy in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia. Nyan also authored many books, writing extensively on Islamic, African, and Middle Eastern affairs. He suffered a stroke last year and had been ailing since then. He was 74 years old. As the DRC battles the spread of the deadly Ebola virus just across the border, Ugandan survivors of a 2007 outbreak are reminded of the near-death experience they went through. Bujumbura District at the border with Uganda and the DRC faced the brunt of the hemorrhagic disease as both health workers and residents lost their lives. Halima Athmani reports from Bujumbura in Uganda.
I don't know how long you're going to be.
Health worker Samuel Kule in 2007 was attending to patients with mysterious fevers along with his brother, who was also a health worker.
And within 2 days, my brother also was affected. So I attended to my brother also. And after 2 days, he was referred to Ndugu Hospital and he died in Ndugu Hospital.
Kule also became infected, and it was his blood test that confirmed Uganda was facing an outbreak of Ebola. Chachimwa Jacobet lost two brothers and a niece to the virus and became infected herself. She recalls the stigma and rejection of being linked to Ebola.
Even those we shared meals with, those who spent their days with us, suddenly never wanted to be around us. When I was admitted to the hospital, the landlord evicted my children out of fear that they would infect others with the disease.
Before the 2007 Ebola outbreak was contained, 149 people were infected and 37 died, five of them health workers. With Ebola spreading once again just over the border in the Democratic Republic of Congo, Uganda is screening border crosses carefully. Uganda's Ministry of Health sent a trial vaccine for frontline workers like Francis Muhindo, who fought the 2007 outbreak.
The threat is that any time anybody can contract it from Congo, cross up to here, and maybe we get in contact with such a person and have a, and contract the disease. So, if I'm immunized, I think I will be safe.
The Ministry of Health says 20,000 people cross the border each week, putting Uganda at high risk of another Ebola outbreak. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Bundibujo.
A vehicle loaded with explosives drove into a residential compound in the city of Gao in Mali, killing four Malian civilians and wounding four foreigners late yesterday. Government officials say the victims were working for a UN contractor that was clearing mines in the country's north. VOA's Bambara service reports that an organization known as the Group to Support Islam and Muslims said it was responsible for the attack. The group said it chose the residents because foreigners live there. Mali has suffered through years of instability since Islamist militants took control of the north in 2012. A French military intervention ousted the militants, but the government struggles to regain control over much of the north. Australia's first female Muslim member of parliament has criticized the prime minister for suggesting that the greatest threat to the nation's way of life is radical, violent, extremist Islam. Scott Morrison's comments came after a knife-wielding Somali-born man was shot by police after a deadly attack in Melbourne on Friday. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Labour parliamentarian Anne Ali, a former international counter-terrorism expert, says Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison's comments on extremism were divisive. Morrison detailed the threat posed by what he called the radical and dangerous ideology of extremist Islam following an attack in Melbourne. Police believe Somalian-born migrant Hassan Khalif Shire Ali, who killed one man and injured two others in a knife attack, had links to Islamic State and had been radicalised. The Prime Minister has urged Islamic communities to ensure dangerous teachings and ideologies didn't spread in Australia. An Ali was born in Egypt and moved to Australia when she was 2 years old. Elected to Parliament in 2016, she's Australia's first female Muslim parliamentarian. She believes that politicians need to focus on giving Islamic communities the expertise and confidence to defuse extremism.
We need to move beyond words of condemnation. I think we need to move beyond these calls for the Muslim community, which every law enforcement agency that I've ever spoken to recognises is a very important ally in security, and move towards an effective prevention and intervention, early intervention mechanism.
Other Islamic leaders believe Friday's deadly attack in Melbourne was a result of failures by Australia's security agencies. The attacker, Shire Ali, previously had his Australian passport cancelled due to concerns he planned to travel to Syria in 2015. Despite being known to hold radical views, he wasn't actively monitored by intelligence agencies and wasn't deemed a threat. He was shot by the police during the attack and died later in the hospital. Meanwhile, a funding campaign has raised almost $85,000 to help a homeless man who tried to stop the attack by ramming him with a shopping trolley. Michael Rogers was filmed trying to stop Shire Ali from stabbing two police officers. The terrorism suspect had already killed a cafe owner and injured two other people. Australia's terror threat level remains at probable. There are 600,000 Muslims in Australia. Islam is the most prominent non-Christian religion in the country. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to The Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Thomas Blondet, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
Is there a leadership deficit in Africa? Does the continent lack leaders who are compassionate about their citizens and believe in strong institutions? Host Shaka Sali returns to lead a discussion on the importance of strong leaders and strong institutions on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, afrobeat and dumbolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.